Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barth in Washington. Today is Tuesday, January 16, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Kenya and Tanzania move to resolve their air travel dispute.
We are neighbors. We are not expecting any matter of this nature to go forever. It will just be something of a few days, and then our leaders will definitely have to look at the matter and resolve the matters.
Eastern DRC hopes peace during President Tshisekedi's second term. Somali and Palestinian delegation push demands ahead of non-aligned summit in Uganda. Guinea's military junta restricts media, citing security threats. Liberia's House of Representatives elects a new speaker ahead of Joseph Boakai's inauguration.
Our citizens expect that we will work together. I think the reconciliation needs to start in both branches. I will be reaching out to the president to extend the olive branch so that we can work together for the Liberian people.
And Zimbabweans, because their future as the country's economic growth is expected to decline to 3.5% in 2024 from 5.5% in 2023. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. It appears the air travel dispute between Kenya and Tanzania may be nearing a resolution. The Tanzania Civil Aviation Authority on Monday suspended all of Kenya Airways passenger flights between Nairobi and Dar es Salaam effective January 22nd. According to the Citizen newspaper of Kenya, the suspension of Kenya Airways landing rights was in response to Kenya's recent rejection of Tanzania's request to allow its airline to operate cargo flights between Nairobi and third countries. Tanzania's government spokesperson Mobare Matani tells me the two countries' foreign ministers spoke on Monday and agreed to work together to resolve the matter.
Our two cabinet ministers responsible for foreign affairs, General Makamba from the United Republic of Tanzania and Musalia Mudavadi from the Republic of Kenya, have already spoken to each other and have agreed that within 3 days the matter will be resolved and everything will be back to normal. And therefore we expect Kenya Airways will continue flying to and for Tanzania, and the Air Tanzania will have the opportunity to do what they had planned before.
Did anything happen that caused this disagreement between the two countries?
Yeah, in fact, Air Tanzania, they now have a cargo plane and they had wanted to start taking cargo from Kenya to a third country. And that was the issue. It seems like the expectations from the Kenyan side were that Air Tanzania should probably offer cargo services between the two countries, but not taking cargo from Kenya to a third country. So they didn't allow that. And in response to that, the Civil Aviation Authority in Tanzania decided to basically prevent Kenyan Airways from flying to and from Tanzania starting 22nd of January. But that now has been resolved, and we hope everything will be back to normal. The 3 days basically are there to allow dealing with civil aviation and the airlines to have a time to talk to each other and then come back to the original agreements between the two countries.
Because this was to have an impact on the movement of people, particularly tourism between the two countries. How would you describe the relationship between Kenya and Tanzania in terms of the movement of people in the region?
We have very good relations, the two countries. Speaking of tourism, yes, we have a lot of tourists moving from, between the two countries. And in fact, even Kenya is actually flies to Zanzibar and Kilimanjaro, not on Dar es Salaam. This ban was only between Nairobi and Dar es Salaam flights, but they have other flights on a daily basis. We also have other means of transport that helps these tourists who are moving from Tanzania to Kenya and Kenya to Tanzania, especially by road. Two countries, we border each other, and at exactly at the border, that's where we have the tourist attractions that I'll probably say that the main ones meet in Kenya or in Tanzania. So that would have affected it somehow, but not to make it chaotic or anything like that one. Still, things would have gone fine without any interest.
So we can say that this issue has been put to rest?
Yes, because there are two ministers who have already said that within 3 days the matter will be over. First of all, we are partner states in the East African community. These are friendly countries. We are neighbors. We depend on each other. We do not expect any matter of this nature to go forever. It will just be something of a few days, and then our leaders will definitely have to look at the matter and resolve the matter as they have said it.
Mubare Matinyi is the spokesperson for the Tanzanian government. He was speaking with us from Dar es Salaam. The summit of non-aligned movement gets underway this week in Uganda's capital, Kampala, where delegations for Somalia and the Palestinian people are lobbying members for support, while the Palestinians are calling on members to find a way to end the conflict in Gaza. Somalia says it needs support to maintain its territorial integrity. Halima Athumani reports.
93 out of 120 nations in the non-aligned movement have gathered in Kampala for the 19th summit of the movement for the plenary session that began Monday. Arab nations made clear that Gaza must be the focus of the meeting. Delegates said the NAM summit must find the right language to address what they called the violent and savage aggression by the State of Israel in perpetuating a genocide in Gaza. A delegate from Mauritius said the summit must make a political declaration on the war, which broke out October 7th after the Palestinian militant group Hamas attacked Israel, killing 1,200 people and taking about 240 hostage, 105 of whom were released in November. Israel's military response has killed 24,000 Palestinians. Riyad Mansour, the Palestinian ambassador to the United Nations, said he does not expect any country to disagree with calling for a ceasefire and humanitarian assistance for the 2.3 million Palestinians displaced from their homes.
We are not asking for anything other than standing with us against this aggression. We are facing a massive calamity. I don't think that it is exaggeration from us to expect support from our brothers and sisters from the movement.
Uganda recently took over chairmanship of the non-aligned movement from Azerbaijan. Vincent Bajire, the permanent secretary at the Ugandan Ministry of Foreign Affairs, says the agenda for the plenary session will be decided by consensus.
We have not subjected the matter of Palestine and Gaza to whether it should be the major topic that we discuss. So Uganda will focus on creating cohesion within the movement to ensure that we can work together as a movement for the good of humanity.
Delegates from Somalia are calling for the 120-state movement to support its territorial integrity and sovereignty. Early this month, Ethiopia signed an agreement with Somaliland, a breakaway region from Somalia, giving Ethiopia access to the sea. In return, Ethiopia would consider recognizing Somaliland as an independent country. Hamza Adan Hado is the permanent secretary in the Somali Ministry of Foreign Affairs.
And that it violates our rights, our integrity and our unit. So that's why we are pushing, and we believe the peace that we had will contribute if a non-alignment movement members stand with us.
Both Somalia and Palestine have 5 days to convince delegates to prioritize their concerns and come up with resolutions before heads of state fly into Uganda for the summit at the end of this week. Halima Athmani for VA News, Kampala, Uganda.
Felix Tshisekedi is set to be inaugurated for a new term as the Democratic Republic of Congo's president after the Constitutional Court confirmed his victory in last month's election. In the eastern part of the country, residents hope the president will focus his attention on bringing peace and security to the volatile region where rebel groups have battled government forces and each other for decades. Zanep Nete Zaide has the details.
Bashik Esperance is a war displaced woman who fled a month ago from Masisi territory, where the armed forces of the Democratic Republic of Congo are fighting the rebel group M23. Esperance is a widow, her husband having been killed by the rebels while working in his field. She says she hopes that President Felix Tshisekedi, in his second term, will focus on bringing peace to the region. She says that the president who will soon be sworn in should be stronger to bring peace because in the camp where she lives, she says she is suffering. She says she would like to return to her village. Esperance sails to support herself and her four-year-old child. She is pregnant and expecting a baby in about a month. She says doesn't want to give birth in the displaced persons camp because life is so difficult. She'd like to give birth in her village. She says that if peace were to return, the DRC could be even better and the people would live better. This is the same wish expressed by Sadiki Willy, a displaced person who has been living in the Kanyaruchinya camp north of the city of Goma for over 10 months. He hopes the president will show concern for the difficult living conditions of the displaced in the camps. He says that the first thing that president should focus on in his second term is peace, and that he should care about the war displaced and do his best to get them back home. He says they used to live better at home in their houses, but here they live in dilapidated shacks with no security. The Democratic Republic of Congo already has a record number of internally displaced people. In October 2023, the number was estimated at 5.6 million, most living in the eastern provinces of North Kivu, South Kivu, Ituri, and Tanganyika. Rebel groups have fought the governments and each other in eastern Congo for decades, battling for political dominance and control of the region's rich mines. Congolese law professor Tresor Makunya has some ideas about how these armed conflicts could be resolved.
The Congolese government has mainly relied on multinational forces such as those from the UN to resolve armed conflicts and security issues in the eastern DRC instead of empowering its own military. I think the national army, the FRDC, needs to be valued. And it can be valued in different ways. First, we have to increase military expenditures. And lastly, we have to ensure accountability for military and for soldiers who are involved in wrongdoing.
Tshisekedi's swearing-in ceremony will take place January 20th in Kinshasa, the Congolese capital. This will be the second term for the 60-year-old president. Zane Mneti Zaidi, VOA News, Goma, in the Democratic Republic of Congo.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Tuesday, January 16th. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. The new Speaker of Liberia's House of Representatives says he will work with President-elect Joseph Boakai's government to do the people's business. Jonathan Fonati Kofa of outgoing President George Weah's Coalition for Democratic Change Party says Liberians expect their leaders to work together following the close October presidential election. Kofa was elected Monday following a contentious campaign full of allegations that both he and challenger Representative Richard Nabekun of Boakai's Unity Party hold dual U.S. and Liberian citizenship, both denying the charges. Speaker Kofa tells me he hopes he and President Boakai can work together on providing better health care and education for Liberians.
Our plan is to organize the legislature, work with the incoming president, the president-elect. After his inauguration, in a week's time after that, he will be submitting his honor message to the legislature, and we hope to then piggyback off of that to determine the agenda he wants to pursue for the next year and prepare to work with him on that.
Mr. Speaker, coming into the election, there was a lot of bad feelings. How do you move forward?
Yeah, so we have a divided country. The presidential election was fairly close. Some people say it was a virtual tie. Even the elections we have today was a tight race. Our citizens expect that we will work together. I think the reconciliation needs to start in both branches. I will be reaching out to the president to extend the olive branch so that we can work together for the Liberian people.
Now, you were deputy speaker in the last session. How would things be different as speaker?
Okay, so we in on a series of legislative reform, primary of which was that the budget that we pass every year, which is the fiscal tool of public policy, should be used to implement programs at district level for the Liberian people, especially in the areas of healthcare, education, and youth empowerment. So we'll be trying to work with the incoming administration to see if we can carve at least 10% of the budget to service those needs. Then there are a lot of modernization things we need to do here at the legislature. The infrastructure is crumbling. We need to put it in also in a digital format so our votes can be recorded. We need internet presence. Our constituents and members need to be able to research our own record. So there are a lot of other things we need to do here at the legislature. Then finally, there are things like staff pay and benefits that need to be increased, competency here at the legislature. A lot of the things we do is we focus on legislative reforms and presidential agenda.
When we spoke, I don't know if I mentioned this to you, Mr. Speaker, but there are a lot of people who have been complaining about the budget of the speaker. They think that it is too much. What do you think about that?
So I would agree, but what the legislature does is that it puts the deputy speaker and the speaker budget separate. What do I mean? That means all of my staff, all of my gasoline allowances, and my own pay is in the budget. So I can live with, if you take out what belongs to my staff, their salaries and stuff, and what belongs to my gasoline allowance, I can waive the rest of the money to general government. But I do not know how much that money is. I need to get in the speaker's office and take a look at the budget.
Jonathan Fonati Kofa is the new speaker of the Liberia House of Representatives. He was speaking with us from Monrovia. Guinea's military has removed several popular private television and radio stations and restricted internet connections, citing national security threats. Several key members of the junta recently came under severe criticism by the private media, which accused them of involvement in widespread corruption and theft. A French journalist who was investigating the alleged cases was arrested in his hotel in the capital on Sunday. Reporter Karim Kamara has more from Conakry.
Even though the chairman of the High Authority of Communication, Abubakar Yassin Jallo, did not directly accuse the three most popular private TV channels of wanting to provoke security breach in the country, he says the removal from the satellite channel of Canal Plus would help to maintain security in the country. Yassin says the removal of the most popular channels will remain in force until further notice. He says after they received a complaint from the competent authorities drawing the attention to potential national security risks, they called an extraordinary plenary meeting. He says during the meeting, they agreed to ask Canal Plus to remove Joma TV from their package of channels until further notice. He says he heard people saying that the High Authority for Communication does not have the right to suspend an information channel or broadcaster, but he says the law authorizes them to withdraw licenses and even to shut down the frequency. Juma Television and its radio were the first news broadcasters to be slammed with a ban, but soon after, two other famous private television channels and stations were also banned. The Secretary General of the Professional Press Association, Sekou Pendesa, dismissed the accusations as baseless and accused the High Authority of Communications of following government orders to silence the press. He says they cannot show you a single program or news bulletin that threatens national security. It is not true. He says even when members of the Union for Radios and Television asked the chairman of the High Authority for Communication about national security issue, he told them that they are investigating. He was only told that they received call from the competent services, he says, which means the High Authority is taking orders. According to observers, this latest deterioration in relationship between the press and the junta comes after the press continues to unveil alleged corruption and poor governance in Guinea. Dr. Edward Zotomo, a political analyst, says the junta has nobody to blame but itself.
The junta is really cornered. The only way for them is to try to create some type of confusion in the country so that people outside won't see what is happening inside. Because if you're doing good deed, in fact, you shouldn't be silencing people. But if you're doing bad things that you don't want people to know, then you will silence people. That's the reason radios, televisions, they're taking them off.
The military authorities on Sunday arrested in Conakry a French journalist, Thomas Dietrich, amid the deteriorating press freedoms in the country. The journalist was arrested while investigating alleged corruption in the country's national oil company, SONAP. Sources say the journalist was interested in how certain officials in Guinea's transition had acquired their wealth. Dietrich had been in the country several days to investigate SONAP and is still in detention. For more than a month now, access to internet has been drastically restricted by the junta, which the authorities say are for security reasons. Reporting for VOA Africa, I am Karim Kamara in Conakry.
Some Zimbabweans say their future looks bleak as the country's economic growth is expected to decline to 3.5% in 2024 from 5.5% in 2023 due to anticipated drought caused by El Nino, which could devastate crop yields in the 2023-2024 agricultural season. But some remain positive, saying resilient Zimbabweans will find many ways of surviving under tough economic conditions. VOA's Gibbs Dube reports.
Many Zimbabweans say the ripple effects of the drought will be felt in their pockets as the El Nino phenomenon is expected to hit the agricultural sector, which is one of the key levers of the Southern African nation's economy. Economic commentator Richosi Ngwenya of the Common Market for Liberal Solutions says Zimbabweans will suffer as there is no solution in sight of fixing the economy.
There is an English saying that says only a fool can do the same thing all over again, repeatedly, and expect different results. Now, this is what I see of the Zimbabwean economy in 2024. You know, the ED Mnangagwa government has been plodding and trouncing the same old path, with the same old policies, with the same old game, with the same old players over and over again. The government that lacks depth and creativity, there is absolutely nothing which Zimbabweans can expect in 2024. Because, like I said, there's nothing that shows that this government has an interest in creating anything new.
But ZANU-PF activist Xavier Zwabare, based in the United Kingdom, says the Zimbabwe economy won't tank to the extent of erasing gains made in the past 3 years.
We are looking towards an interesting year for the ordinary people. Of course, as ZANU-PF, we are optimistic that the measures which the Minister of Finance intends to implement will help stabilize the economy, not only stabilize but propel it to greater heights. We are aware of the concerns of most of our supporters, our members, and the general populace in Zimbabwe regarding the economy. Of course, we are also praying, because we are an agro-based economy, we are also praying to God that we have enough rains, that, you know, our dams, which we have constructed over the last few years in the Second Republic, as you are aware, will have enough water so that we can have enough irrigation, enough farming activities to keep the economy going.
For Angiston Sibanda, director of Africa Technologies, business executives should plan properly in order to survive in 2024.
What's important as an entrepreneur is to be able to identify opportunities in the midst of the challenges that we are facing, in the midst of adversity, which is what I would encourage fellow entrepreneurs to do.
In its recent Zimbabwe Economic Review update, the World Bank predicted a slump in the economy in 2024 after noting that economic activity accelerated in the country in the last few years despite global challenges. Gibbs Dube, VOA News, Washington.
And that's it for this Tuesday, January 16th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your morning with us. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Botting, Washington, wishing that you will have an amazing Tuesday.